everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Today, an in-depth investigation into the perils and falsehoods about 5G technology. Two panelists, from Wyoming, Dr. Deborah Davis, and also from Maryland, Theodora Scoretto. Dr. Davis is a highly distinguished medical researcher, epidemiologist, and health activist who has served as an advisor on chemical safety to the Department of Health and Human Services and the CDC and the UN and the European Environmental Agency and the World Health Organization and other national and international bodies. Currently, she is the founder and president of the Environmental Health Trust, the world's only nonprofit that conducts high-level scientific research on environmental health hazards while communicating the same to governments and local communities and educators. Dr. Davis holds degrees from the University of Pittsburgh, where she later founded the School Center for Environmental Oncology, and she received her doctorate from the University of Chicago, an additional degree in public health from Johns Hopkins. She's taught at Hebrew University Medical School, and she has also taught in Turkey, in Mount Sinai, and the Carnegie Mellon University and Oberlin Universities. She has published more than 200 scientific papers and is the author of several important works, including The Secret History of War on Cancer and Disconnect, The Truth About Cell Phone Radiation. The Environmental Health Trust website is ehtrust.org. Theodora is the executive director of the Environmental Health Trust, where she coordinates scientific programs with international institutions and experts about wireless technology risks. The Trust is a leading scientific health organization working on the risks of 5G technology and cell phone and tower radiation. It organizes and sponsors educational campaigns for policymakers and environmental groups, as well as publishing scientific research. Theodora also manages the Trust database of research on policy data, which is one of the largest in the world, for efforts to reduce EMF exposure and monitor cities' actions regarding 5G rollout. She lectures internationally on best practices for schools to follow to reduce EMF exposure, and she was largely responsible for the reduction of radio frequency exposure in Maryland's school system. Her webinar to the United Educators of San Francisco for Schools to Reduce Childhood Exposure can be found online. Nice to have you both with us today.
Very nice to be here. Nice to talk to you again, Gary.
Thank you. Deborah, I'm going to start with you, and I just want to give a brief overview. Recently, we have seen in the last 9 months ever-increasing numbers of commercials showing the power, the uniqueness of 5G. It is always painted with the brush that it is something that will increase our capacity to get data, whatever that data may be. It shows doctors and hospitals being able to download patient records and to transfer information. It shows people being able to connect at much greater frequencies and at speeds to their internet devices. And for a young audience, that's extremely appealing. And especially in a society where we engage in what I call intentional neglect. And I couldn't figure out for decades why smart people in their field, accomplished, including PhDs, scientists, even my friend Linus Pauling, who was the only American to ever win two unshared Nobel Prizes, one in chemistry and one in peace, why they could be so smart in one area and so oblivious to the facts in another area. And it finally occurred to me about 2 years ago when I came up with this concept of intentional neglect, that there's a point to where we feel uncomfortable looking for the truth if that truth would in any way undermine our existing rituals of belief. And most people go through life with a series of daily rituals. Well, what happens if those rituals are found to be unnecessary, counterintuitive, counterproductive, or simply wrong? like women getting the synthetic hormone replacement therapy, even though all of the science published in the peer-reviewed literature, including the government's own data, showed that the 10 million women getting it were putting themselves at risk of heart attack, stroke, breast cancer, ovarian cancer, colorectal cancer, and dementia at a 13%. That's 1.3 million women every year putting themselves at risk for what, had they done their research, which are relatively simple, going up on PubMed, going to the Library of Medicine, reviewing what was at the National Academy of Sciences, and saying, wow, yeah, this might turn off hot flashes and prevent osteoporosis, but at the cost of my life, there are other methods that could do that. But that is a classical example of what I believe is intentional neglect, because if you intentionally neglect the truth because you can't handle it, or you're over-aligned with a particular philosophy, or let's say politic or ideology, then from intentional neglect comes intentional ignorance. And therefore you can say, who knew? Who knew vaccines were so dangerous and lacking in efficacy and safety? We trusted the authorities. So then comes plausible deniability. It's not my responsibility to make healthy choices. It's the government's. Because the government doesn't ask for my advice. It doesn't open itself up to having the citizens, even educated citizens, challenge what it believes is in the interest of the public. As a result, we constantly make bad choices as a society because those we entrust with helping us in our choices are themselves either ignorant by intent, don't want to know the truth if it lies outside of something they can control. And that's a particularly true of the media, which is incredibly biased on all sides and totally biased within the halls of Congress, even the Supreme Court, and certainly the presidency. So then it comes down, well, who in the heck are you going to believe? So then comes 5G or 4G or 3G or 2G and 1G. And Deborah, I watched a testimony you gave before the U.S. Congress where they were asking you very good questions. Arlen Specter was one of them. Is this dangerous? And you said yes. Now, that was at 1G, and that was about over 11 years ago. So now we're at 5G, and no one in the media is questioning it. To the New York Times, they are actually supporting it. And the Washington Post is supporting it, and CNN is supporting it.
Actually, the New York Times is partners with some of the leading telecom companies that are advocating 5G. And unfortunately, their coverage of the issue has not been up to their normal standards, as it has reflected what appears to be some sort of inherent bias. So they have not reported on the growing evidence that 5G can be damaging to public health and to the environment. And, you know, what 1G really was, Gary, was the bag phone. Very few people had it. You know, you had to carry it around. It was heavy, or it was in a car, and it was analog. And so we move ahead to 2G, 3G, 4G, and each one of these technologies requires a complete break with the one before it. It also means, of course, you need new equipment, new devices, and more money for the companies involved. And the telecom industry is a brilliant industry. They are the most successful, I think, in the history of the world, and they've been very innovative. But what they have not done is invest in evaluating the public health and environmental impacts of these technologies. And I am one of over 200 scientists who have petitioned the United Nations asking for a moratorium on 5G because we already have evidence that it can be harmful. And what we would like to see is that the wireless transmission of 5G not proceed. And I want to explain, wireless is the concern, not... If this could be wired, as indeed it is for all major banks and hospitals and police and fire stations, they have wired connections to any of the internet systems they have. Most of them have wired for security reasons, because wired is more secure, it's safer, and by the way, it's faster, even now. You can never use the speeds you get with a wired connection into your home and then wired to your home and through your home, you'll have faster speeds and you will not have exposure to microwave radiation. It might be useful for Theodora to take a minute and explain what 5G consists of so people would understand what the different parts of it are.
Okay, that's fine. I just don't want to jump ahead of ourselves because most people, at least in the general population, have no clue what 5G is. This audience does. Richard Gale and I just wrote a major article on it. So if you would, Theodora, take your time and let's go through everything that the peer-reviewed science, including over 10,000 scientific studies and more than 22,000 to 26,000 scientists who wrote a letter and signed off on a letter about its dangers, what they're saying, and yet the mainstream media, congressional committees, the Federal Communications Commission refuses to acknowledge in the New York Times. They say there is no danger because there's no study showing harm. And they may be right because the industry has not done the studies, but others have. So take us through the litany of what it does step by step. The forum is yours.
Okay, well, there's a lot to say, and I'm going to briefly touch on the science and bounce it back to Dr. Davis. But in terms of that appeal, there was an appeal signed now by, I think, over 240 experts who have published in the peer-reviewed literature stating that harm is established because 5G is going to increase exposure to everything we have now, the 2G, 3G, 4G, Wi-Fi, all of these frequencies in use now, and then add in new higher frequencies. We also know that it will increase the environmental levels of radio frequency and higher submillimeter, and the industry is stating they'll be using millimeter waves. So it will increase the wireless radiation in the environment. And in fact, in countries where there are lower allowable limits, because those countries don't allow as much radiation as in the United States, Australia, and there are several countries that have among the highest allowable levels from networks, from cell towers and cell antennas. In those countries, industry is actively trying to change their laws so that they can accommodate the higher levels, especially in the vicinity of the antennas, that a full 5G deployment needs. And actually, a lot of what's going on is, in fact, 4G densification. So there's a lot of talk about 5G, but then they're putting in 4G antennas, and later they will put on the 5G antenna systems after. I could talk more, but there's so many aspects to this. It's going to be...
Let's continue with this. The average person is not necessarily familiar with the physics of electromagnetic frequencies, nor the possible or known outcomes. So take us through the illnesses that are likely to happen if a person is exposed with one of these cell towers right beside their house or on top of their apartment building, so we know the possible consequences.
So there is a paper that was published by several experts, and Dr. Davis being one, so I'm gonna hand it off after I just say that there are scientists who are reviewing the literature and stating that this radiation is a human carcinogen, but that is really the tip of the iceberg because of the research impacts to sperm and reproduction, and what got me involved in this, which is impact to brain development and brain function, research linking exposure to behavior in children and prenatal exposure.
Jump in and say that we have the cancer work. We have both human studies and we have animal studies. And the human studies have been done largely in Scandinavian countries or European countries where people started to use these devices earlier. And we have clear evidence that electromagnetic fields that are invisible, that most people cannot feel, that do not generate heat, at the frequency of which the phones and at the planned frequency of 5G, which is 5 billion to 100 billion cycles a second, that that high frequency does not get into the skin very deeply, but it has profound biological effects. It can stimulate cell growth of bacteria and viruses and possibly cancer cells. It can interfere with the ability of cells to repair themselves because it prevents the formation of normal repair processes because it increases reactive oxygen species. This produces a kind of Pac-Man-like creature that goes around and gobbles up whatever it can find in the body that's loose and knocks off the electrons and destabilizes things. And we know these biological properties of 5G are very important, but the research has been done in people with 3G and 4G, and that research has shown that people who use cell phones regularly for 10 years or more have between a 50% to an 800% increase in a highly malignant, relatively rare tumor of the brain, glioblastoma. In addition, there are increases in tumors of the hearing nerve, as well as thyroid cancer, and I believe there is also an increase in rectal cancer in young people under the age of 40, which is showing up in the CDC, a dramatic increase in rectal cancer in young people. Never seen anything like that before. Well, think about all those young people with the skinny jeans and the phones in the back pocket and the microwave radiation going right into that rectal area. It certainly is something that surgeons are looking into right now and deeply concerned about, as there just seem to be more and more of these cases that we've never seen before in such young people. In addition to the cancer story, as Theodora indicated, we know that sperm are adversely affected, and we know this not just from theoretical work with animals, which has and studies in animals, but because at the Cleveland Clinic, as well as in Australia's major research center on male health, they have each done the following experiment. They've taken sperm from healthy men and put them into two test tubes. One tube gets exposed to cell phone radiation. The other does not. Now, of course, they're going to die because sperm don't belong in a test tube. But what happens is they die three times faster and they have three times more damage on their DNA if they have been exposed to cell phone radiation. Now, why is this important? Because, as you know, we have this dramatic decline in sperm count all over the world. There are many factors that can contribute to this, including pesticides. And I know you've been very involved in that as well, Gary, and I appreciate it. But among the factors that could account for the radical decline in sperm is, of course, the expansion and the use of wireless radiation.
Could you also go through what is likely to happen to young children and toddlers who are now using cell phones or the pads at a very young age?
Well, we are, the American Academy of Pediatrics has issued guidelines. And on paper, at least, the cell phone companies adhere to them, and they say that they tell people this. The guidelines say no screen time for children under two. And the reason is because the developing brain gets so excited by these rapidly moving colors and things that it becomes a very addictive stimulant. And we've seen it everywhere. But it doesn't just addict the young child. But the young brain, of course, doubles in the first 2 years of life. And that is a time when you want to protect the brain from any exogenous factors. It's absolutely essential to do that. We do great lengths to give our babies helmets and protect them in cars, but we are giving them these devices without realizing you're handing a child a two-way microwave radio. Now, the iPad has tested for use by a 220-pound man with a 12-pound head, and about 20 centimeters, maybe 8 inches, away from that large body. That is not an adequate model for giving an iPad to an infant or a toddler. And we have now such things as the iPad teething rattle case and the iPotty. Now, if these companies are really sincere about not wanting to promote toddlers' and infants' brains getting damaged by this exposure, they wouldn't then be allowing the production of these devices that absolutely enable this kind of exposure, and we see it everywhere. You go into high-end restaurants, and the children will sit down, and they'll be very quiet because they're all glued to some screen. And we've actually, research has now shown that children of parents who use phones regularly have delays in speech development. Speech development. Their brains are not processing the information because the parent isn't talking to them. The phone or the iPad becomes a kind of babysitter. This is a very, very bad idea. And the American Academy of Pediatrics has given advice about this that can be found on their website as well as ours. And we have safety cards with this information that tells you what is appropriate to do for children. We believe that children should not be playing with these devices generally. And the French government has banned cell phones in schools for kids under the age of 16. And I think that's a good idea for a lot of reasons.
I'd like you to continue on that theme because we're seeing an epidemic of psychological conditions in the younger population. Now, the conventional medical paradigm wants to protect the chemical, electronic, and telecommunications and agricultural chemical food industries and find every reason to blame more and more illnesses solely on genes. But at the same time, they want to push aside the epigenetic factors that most likely explain these genetic abnormalities being discovered in the lab. And it's long known, it's long known that radiation disrupts genetic expression. Can you comment upon this relationship between electromagnetic frequency radiation from a cell phone or a tablet or a computer and genetic disruption and the rise in diseases and disorders that we're witnessing today?
Certainly, and I appreciate, let's just be very common sense here. Over the past 20 years, we've had a huge increase, as you indicated, in autism, in degenerative diseases that are reportedly being diagnosed at younger and younger ages, as well as in certain unusual cancers, just in the past 20 years. Now, do you think our genes have changed that much in 20 years? No. This obviously is reflecting the interaction of the environment with our genes. And the evidence for the importance of the environment for our health comes from studies that have been done on twins. Identical twins come from one egg, and they split at conception, so you get two identical beings from it. Studies have shown that if you look at the methylation patterns of the genes of identical twins, that at age 3, they look pretty close to identical. But by age 50, you can find the same twins do not look like they're even related to one another. One might have been a smoker. One might have worked in a plant producing glyphosate. One might have had exposures to X-rays through radiation as a technician. Different exposures account for different methylation patterns in identical twins. So what we say is that genes give us the gun, but the environment pulls the trigger. And it's environmental factors that we have to look at more closely, as you have indicated in many of your programs. And when we look at those environmental factors, we have an extraordinary array of evidence in terms of their ability to affect human health. We know that for most cancers, 9 out of 10 cases, whether it's breast or colon, comes from not whatever you've inherited from your father or mother, but from the environment. Only 1 in 10 cases of breast cancer results from an inherited germline mutation. And yet, all these cases of cancer ultimately result because the gene has become challenged. But its challenge comes from the environment, not from what you inherited from the parent. That is why, you know, germline mutations are very interesting and important to study, and they're the stuff for which people get the Nobel Prize. But it is the acquired somatic mutation that is most determinative of most patterns of health in people.
Thank you. I appreciate that insight. Theodora, how much do you contribute our overuse of electromagnetic frequency emitting technologies to certain disease and psychological epidemics? And then when we take an honest look, we're not seeing the mainstream media, nor are we seeing the public health agencies like the CDC or the U.S. Public Health Service that oversees all of our government health agencies looking for the truth in the same way that independents are looking. So when I look at those speaking out most loudly against 5G, I find few are the thought leaders in the environmental movement. It's like the environmental movement has abandoned 5G as being a contributing factor to the destruction of our environment. Yet I'm a certified organic farmer and have been my entire adult life. I've taught farming and soil conservation, and I've always had beehives, as I do today. The moment you introduce something into that environment that they're not used to, such as neonicotinoids, a pesticide, they begin to die off. Now, all around me, I've had farmers who've had bees that have died off. Mine haven't. And when you start introducing electromagnetic frequencies, and the bees communicate where honey is or pollen is, nectars, by doing little circular dances that tell everyone else in the hive, this is where it is, electromagnetic frequencies disrupt that. We've seen the beaching and the suicide of thousands of mammals, whales, porpoises, even walruses committing suicide. And we believe part of that is because of the HARP program and the sonar programs that send waves out that disrupt natural navigational principles. So when we look at all this, none of this about the environment and what it's doing is being covered by the environmental movement, which I'm very disappointed in. But it's a big issue contributing to many of the energy-intensive technologies, because all these energy-intensive technologies are going to be using 5G. So what is the approximate carbon footprint of 5G after we factor in the installation of numerous towers, the natural resources required to do so, including 20,000 rockets that were fired into space to position satellites, and then the energy consumption to keep the entire network operative? And behind a lot of this, not all of it, is Elon Musk, the billionaire, head of Tesla. And I would think that some of these people in Silicon Valley should set their megalomania and narcissistic complex aside for a moment just to talk in common sense about the destruction they're wreaking upon the environment. Your thoughts?
Yeah, you hit a lot of key things, which I'm just going to briefly speak on. One is the impact to bees, because there is, as you described, impacts to disturbing the colonies, changing their behavior, and their egg production. And now we're adding in higher frequencies, and there was a study that was published in Scientific Reports, which is actually the first study to investigate how insects, and one of the insects they looked at was the Western honeybee, how do they absorb the higher frequencies that are to be used in the 5G rollout, or what industry is stating the submillimeter and millimeter waves. And when they looked at this, and the first thing I'll say is, this is the first study according to the paper, and how have we not done this before, right? And what they found is that the higher the frequency, to a degree where that frequency matched and was close to the size of the insect, they absorbed much more of that radiation was absorbed into the body. And the researchers concluded that this can lead to changes, of course, in insect behavior, physiologically and morphology over time, and are warning on this. And we know that trees and plants are sensitive to these frequencies. There was a field study that was done, for example, over many years following trees, and found damage to the trees on the sides that faced the antennas. Environmental Health Trust has pages dedicated to this. We have a page on bees, a page on wildlife, where we put the published research, we link to it, we summarize it. The one other thing that you brought up, which I think is really important that we've been working on, is getting out information about the increased energy consumption. So you imagine all of these new devices all require energy. All of these installations, which industry calls small cell, and by the way, we're talking about 800,000, according to FCC chairman, and we certainly expect more than that just in the United States for the next few years. So that's 800,000 more wireless antenna installation sites, which are being proposed in, literally in people's front yards. But then all the devices that they're connecting to, and there are reports which are documenting it's going to raise overall energy costs and needs. Industry has not met their goals for energy efficiency. I know Katie Singer has a new book, Our Web of Inconvenient Truths, which talks about this. And also there's the issue of toxic waste and the fact that we're not really recycling these. And when they are being recycled, we're polluting communities. You know, kids are pulling apart the pieces and in other countries and being impacted by the lead. There's also, of course, the conflict minerals and the mining and how we're even creating every part of the chain of the creation of all of these devices. The unfettered rollout is impacting communities everywhere at every point of the life cycle of a device, from the beginning to the end, from the people working on the chips and the benzene in factories to where we're supposedly recycling and not recycling.
That's a very good point. And let me just say that I think that we have to recognize that there are a lot of unintended consequences and that there's no free lunch here. One minor thing, Gary, there have not been 20,000 satellites in space yet, but Elon Musk and others are planning to basically blanket the lower areas of space with satellites that will then be involved in 5G. And we object in the most strenuous terms possible to this experiment with our planet. I mean, that's why these guys want to go to Mars. They know that this one's going to be pretty much destroyed at the rate we're going. I certainly hope that Elon Musk gets the message. He has children, too. And the idea that this radiation is harmless absolutely flies in the face of science. Here's what we know. Yes, 5G is higher frequency. And yes, it only gets in a 64th of an inch or a few millimeters into the skin. But guess what? The effect that it has on the body is not just the stimulation of the skin, where if, by the way, you have had too much sun damage and you have a precancerous growth, this will tend to encourage it to become a cancer. But once you get that exposure, it has a systemic effect. And we need to evaluate that. We need to study it. And again, I believe we need to push for wired and not wireless. If we could agree on generally going wired, which would be a big radical change, that would mean all these buildings that are being built only for wireless would have Ethernet connections in every room, would have cabling possibilities so that people don't have to be exposed to wireless radiation. We need a national conversation about exactly what's going to happen if the current proposal goes ahead. Senators Schatz and Thune have a joint bill, which is being touted as a great example of bipartisanship. Well, it is good to have bipartisanship nowadays. Lord knows we need it. But their bill, which is called Streamlining for 5G, is really a steamroller bill. It would force localities to accept 5G wherever the providers want to establish the antennas. And in many areas, Wyoming, unfortunately, one of them, where the state is ignorant about the issue, they are allowing these antennas to be 8 feet above people. Now, people live very close to that height. And you can see signs on some of the ones that have gone up that say, above this level can exceed the FCC exposure guidelines. Well, give me a break. You're putting it on the ground above that level, but it might be right by your kid's bedroom window. So we're very concerned about the train wreck that we seem to be getting ready to have. But we do believe that when the public gets more concerned and letters are written to Senators Thune and Schatz and Senator Schumer and your local senator, wherever he or she is, saying, please do not pass this bill that is proposing to streamline 5G. When the public gets more informed and more engaged, this is going to change what we're doing here. I believe those groups that need 5G, which may be businesses and the military and medicine, they can have 5G and it can be wired to them. As a matter of fact, the European Parliament had an analysis that said that in Singapore, they are focusing on 5G only to the factories and the businesses, and it will be largely wired, and they're not even going to try to get it to consumers. And for China, which we're supposedly in a race with them, they are basically using this for surveillance of the population. That is what 5G allows. Very good, thorough surveillance. Well, they have surveillance now in China. Now, if you're in an airport in China, which I have been frequently as I teach at Sichuan University, there's facial recognition software running all the time, every time you enter any checkpoint in a Chinese airport. So a friend of mine lost a laptop. They forgot to pick it up when they went through the security, went back to security, and security ran the tape, found the person who had picked up the laptop and taken it to their plane, found that person on the flight and seat they were on, removed them and the laptop, because they had facial recognition software that can recognize your face, the way you walk, even when you can hear the way you talk. If you ever want to play a game with your phone, whisper into it when you're doing your dictation, and you will find that it picks up every word that you whisper, because these devices are remarkable. They can detect every sound you make, and unless you turn off, as I have done, some of the software, they will tell you how many steps you've taken every day. Now, you may want that information, but that should be your decision, and it should be your information, not information being used for marketers to exploit you.
You're listening to Dr. Deborah Davis. Deborah is speaking to us from Wyoming. She's a highly distinguished medical researcher, epidemiologist, and health activist. She graduated from University of Pittsburgh, where she later founded the School Center for Environmental Oncology, and she received her doctorate from University of Chicago in addition to additional degrees as well. And she is being joined in this discussion by the Executive Director of the Environmental Health Trust, Theodora Scarato. Is that pronounced correctly?
Yes, Scarato. Yes.
Okay. And they are going through this step by step. I'm going to introduce this to another segment of this program with different questions, but I just want to mention for all of our satellite stations listening right now and our sister station WBAI, et cetera, that this Sunday I will be giving a webinar on slowing down and reversing the aging process naturally. As many of you know, I was a research fellow at the Institute of Applied Biology for 33 years and did all of its research. I was the head of the department in anti-aging medicine. And I've done the PBS special, How to Live Forever, and Age is Only a Number. And I'm at the point now, having done multiple studies published in peer-reviewed journals, working with more than 40 clinical studies, more than 70,000 persons counseled one-on-one, that I believe that if we can just hold on for another 5 years, you will see the greatest leap in anti-aging in history. And right now, if you follow the right protocols, including the right diets and the right exercise and de-stressing, that we could knock anywhere from a few years to as many as 30 years off of our aging, or put it in a different way, we can add those on to our life. So if you're at 70, there's no reason you couldn't live to be 100 if you changed your behavior and lifestyle, perceptions, diet, etc. But then it gets to what is it? And we have these foolish diets like the paleo diet and the keto diet and the high-protein diets. So I'm going to go through what we're doing wrong and how many years it takes off of us, and you'll be shocked of just being sedentary, sitting for more than 2 hours at a time, versus what adds years onto our life. And it's taken me all these years to come up with this protocol. It'll be a brand new protocol for everyone in the audience. And then I'll be taking calls. Go to prn.fm or garynall.com, and you can see the information for this Sunday's webinar. Now, to both of you, this issue, and we'll start, I want you both to address it, but I'd like you to start, Deborah. Right now, most people trust the government when it comes to health issues. As a result, when the CDC and the FDA and the U.S. Public Health Service and the National Cancer Institute, National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, all say that there is no problem with wireless technology. We're talking about cell phones, laptops, but the science that's published in the peer-reviewed journal on PubMed has 10,000 studies that would contradict that and shows that they're wrong. And yet now the public's caught in a quandary. Who do we believe? Then you get all these reporters and these physicians working for the different networks, and they always align themselves as if they're all reading from the same talking points that these are not dangerous, and if you even question them, there's something wrong with you. You're a conspiratorial theorist, and you're a fringe person because mainstream science, mainstream medicine doesn't agree with you. So I would like for you to address the political and social efforts that must be made, because if you stop just at the FCC, if you just have some hearings, they've done this dog and pony show 1,000 times, they'll bring some people together. It'll always be ones they select that they know the outcome, but average people will not be given the same opportunity you would because you're known in the field, but the average person would not. And so your voice is not going to be heard. The lobbyists' voices will be heard because a legislator will go from a committee hearing back to their office, and suddenly people who are always looking at their future advancement, including chiefs of staff and the protocol officers within the legislative process, they're going to be talking to you about who you should align with and why. The legislators are not scholars. They're not researchers. Even those that are physicians are not that bright on issues. So we, the public, are left with the false impression that somehow this is going to be vetted properly. And then when it's done, it's hard to undo. And then you go back to who really gave them all this permission and power. And it was Bill and Hillary Clinton, because they're the ones who allowed them to pass and write their own legislation that said that you, the public, cannot determine where these towers are going, even if you have legitimate concerns about public health. And a federal law supersedes state law, so a state can say, yeah, well, we're going to ban 5G in our playgrounds and hospitals, and the industry can be patient and wait because they know they're going to win. So what do we do, knowing that the game from the very beginning was fixed, that these are incorrigibly corrupt companies, the telecommunication companies? After all, they've all been cooperating with spying on us for decades. We found that out with WikiLeaks and Julian Assange. And then Obama went back and backtracked and got all these companies to then pay attention, even though they've been illegally giving information to the National Security Agency. So how do we surmount such incredible challenges when they have the power? They control the media, they control the New York Times, they control a lot of scientists for hire. A lot of departments at universities count upon the largesse of corporate America. Take your time, both of you, and address this issue as well.
Well, let me just start out. This may surprise you, but there has been a few outliers when it comes to media coverage of this issue. One has been Fox News, locally and sometimes nationally, that has actually entertained some of the information that we're talking about here today. And the other was RT, which, as you know, is a Russian outlet, and it is Russian propaganda. But they do have reporters that work for them that are not puppets and Americans. One of them is Larry King, and they have done a decent job of reporting. The other thing I want to mention to you is that there have been reports that have evaluated the FCC and the FDA, and they have concluded that they are a captured agencies. And specifically, Harvard University has a Center for Ethics, the SAFRA Center for Ethics. And when it was held at the law school, shepherded under Professor Lawrence Lessig, who is an expert in the First Amendment and renowned constitutional expert, the report issued by the Safra Center for Ethics concluded, and the title was, "The FCC is a Captured Agency." Now, hopefully, we will get that information before the legislators. We have a lot of new legislators. They don't know much about this issue. But let me tell you, you remember the movie Thank You for Smoking? And it was all about how there was this guy whose job was to promote smoking. And he had, for friendship, he got together with people who had had to promote alcohol and guns. And they called themselves the Mod Squad for Merchants of Death. Well, in this movie, the very end of the movie, the guy goes through a lot of hard times trying to promote tobacco. And there's a group of people sitting in front and they're looking a little uncomfortable with suits on. And from off camera, the voice says, "Well, is it true? Do cell phones cause brain cancer?" And the movie is in the early 90s. And they all start to speak at the same time over one another. "Well, we're not sure." And he says, "Listen, gentlemen, I want you to practice saying these words in front of the mirror every day. While we are concerned about the matter, at this point, there is no direct evidence." Now, that message has been industry's message for years. But in addition, as I document in my book, Disconnect, which, by the way, can be purchased on Amazon, in that book, I quote a memo from Mongavin Associates to Motorola saying, "We hope that the job has been done adequately, that there are war games underway to dispute this new scientific reports from Professor Henry Lai, who was a very distinguished and is a very distinguished researcher and innovator in this field, who showed back in 1994 and 5 that cell phone-like radiation damaged the DNA in the brain. And by the way, his finding has been replicated over and over again, including most recently by the U.S. National Toxicology Program. That finding of damaged DNA in the brain, the industry understood that there would be terrible if that finding got published. So what did they do? As I document in my book, Disconnect, they tried to get Henry Lai fired. They went to the journal that had accepted the article and tried to get it unaccepted. And when all that failed, they went to NIH and tried to get the government to stop giving these researchers money by accusing them of fraud. And you know, as a scientific researcher, that an accusation of fraud is a death knell for any researcher. And fortunately, Henry Lai, of course, was able to prevail. But it had a huge negative mark on him. And as this industry has done over and over again, they have tried to go after the scientists who produce the science and do whatever they can to get the work not published. Now, interestingly, the insect study that Theodora mentioned was carried out by several researchers that have been directly supported by industry. And that insect study is a really pretty remarkable piece of work because it shows they created phantom models of these bugs, all right? So they did a very scientific analysis of different bugs, including, by the way, the honeybee and the Australian bee and the locust, et cetera. And what they did was with these models, they rotated them and they were able to show the absorption of the different frequencies. And they warn, their findings are such that they warn that these 3D studies are showing that you can get the signal to resonate completely with the body of these animals. Now, think about what that means. There are over 1,000 different insects that are critical to pollination, which is critical to agriculture. 1,000 different insects. And their conclusion is that the absorption for these insects can be up to 3 times more than would normally be expected. And as a result, what they conclude is that there's a serious problem here in terms of what this does for these insects, and we need to take it seriously to understand what this means in the real world, because they were able to make these phantom models, and of course, it's a model is only as good as the assumptions that go into it, but these are the same people that developed the human body models that are being used by the FDA when it comes to surgery and other things. So there's a lot of strengths in what this team did, but their conclusion was that there's a tremendous absorption into the animal's body, and that this could turn out to be a real problem, because with frequencies above 6 gigahertz, you're going to get a potential increase in temperature, which is and therefore, of course, this could contribute to what we are seeing around the world already, which is a global decline in insect populations.
Can I add on to this that there has been no environmental review for the rollout? So all of these impacts to insects, impacts to trees and the tree canopy, the FCC has been passing, moving forward regulations which are not only stripping local authority, but there's no environmental review. What is going to be the impact with all of these new frequencies? And Investigate Europe did a report as well, in addition to the Harvard report that I would add on to, which it was called 5G, the Mass Experiment, and I think they have a second one, How Much is Safe, where they talk about the industry involvement in the research. I really recommend it. It's Investigate Europe, and they share how they're industry loyal, which is what scientists have actually been publishing on. They're industry loyal groups who are considered the national and international authorities. And in fact, and the term used was actually the ICNIRP cartel, there's a group of a handful, just over a dozen scientists who are actually represented in several of the groups.
You should explain what ICNIRP is. We haven't used that term before, and people won't know that it's the International Commission on Non-Ionizing Radiation Protection, and it's largely a self-appointed group of experts. There's no review, no oversight whatsoever, and yet it sets the standards that have been adopted throughout the world in many countries, although many have adapted them. For example, in India, they issued their own standards, which are 100 times more stringent, and yet not stringent enough by many accounts.
Okay, we're coming up. Hold on one second. We're coming up to the end of the program in 3 minutes, and I'd like for you both to have an opportunity to address this. I have seen an enormous increase, as I'm sure you both have, of children and teens suffering from epidemics in autism, and it's been denied the causes. It's all in the gene, they say. Not vaccines, not mercury, not aluminum, the adjuvant, or none of the electromagnetic pulses. And now we're seeing an epidemic in adults and children in environmental sensitivity, where people are so sensitive to the frequencies and the chemicals, the smells, in their environment that they're having a hard time coping. And initially, medicine said this was all psychosomatic. None of it was real, just like they said Gulf War syndrome for at least 20 years. They said it was not real. But it was. So what is it going to take? Is it going to take having an epidemic or pandemic of environmental illnesses in this country, with children having brain tumors or disrupted metabolism, chronic ear infections, before we have an honest person in government, now that's an oxymoron, who actually says it's a cause, because otherwise you're facing the same dilemma that we had in the past with the tobacco industry and then the asbestos industry, and then Monsanto and Bayer and others with the neonicotinoids and glyphosate, where they also try to get rid of the evidence that it caused mammary tumors by destroying the reputation of Seralini. He sued and won, by the way. And now it took all these decades, and they've lost 3 lawsuits in a row, and they have 15,000 lawsuits to go up against them on the glyphosate. If we don't have 30 years of allowing this to occur before we finally one day say, yeah, we made another big mistake, and no one's going to be held accountable, and a corporation may pay some money, but that's part of the cost of doing business. What's it going to take?
Well, one of the things that's been happening is that there is a lawsuit now in the Ninth Circuit. The National Natural Resources Defense Council is the only major environmental organization to have weighed in a serious way on this particular issue. And they are demanding that the FCC follow the law and do an impact assessment, an environmental impact assessment on 5G. Fortunately, the NRDC is involved in this. They have an outstanding group of legal experts, but like most of the other environmental organizations, they're stretched thin, and nobody has really the expertise that's needed in the science here, because the science is, in fact, complicated. So what's it going to take? It's going to take more and more shows like this, more and more things, talking with people like Deborah Copald and others, where you get the information out so people can understand this is real, this is immediate, and you can do something about it. And our position is we want it wired to and through the premises. And you want to have the option. But in fact, what's going to happen, in the model has been, you replace one technology with the other. So eventually you're going to have new equipment and new software and new programs that will all be 5G ready. But what if you don't want it? What if you don't want to be able to download a movie to your phone in 3 seconds? And many of us don't. So that's the challenge for us as a nation. We need a conversation about that. And what it's going to take is leadership from some members of Congress, and I hope that we will have that soon, because I have heard, we know Senator Richard Blumenthal has written and demanded to the FCC that he wants answers about 5G, and I think Theodora can tell you about the other people in Congress that are stepping up and the other actions that are taking place at the local level.
Well, we don't have time for that, but what we do have time to mention is that the book is A Disconnect, The Truth About Cell Phone Radiation by Deborah Davis, and also from Theodora Scarrato, the Environmental Health Trust website is ehtrust.org, and that way you can get up to date on all of the other information. Thank you both very much for coming on, and we will continue to be on top of this issue. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day.
Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know